streaming at you live from their hidden location in their secret lair 10 miles off the beaches of the Emerald Coast. Chimichanga Talk, brought to you by Beach Bum Comics, with your host, Deadpool Speaks, and the Great Wang! Alright, and welcome back. It's another wonderful week here in Chimichanga Talk, brought to you by Beach Bum Comics. With you here, as always, is Deadpool Speaks, and with me, as always, is the Great Wang.
Yes, yes, the Great Wang has arrived. He is on site.
Wow, someone really inflated your ego, Wang. I mean, you're just on the ball today, aren't you?
Well, I'm on the ball, and yes, somebody definitely inflated what I call my ego.
Well, you know, we got a great show lined up today, and before we jump into our guests, we, as always, will cover some of the news of this last week. And if you don't mind, I'll kick it off, Wang.
Sure, man.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this remake that's actually going on right now, and it seems like everything's being remade, but Spike Lee was doing a remake of Old Boy.
Right, right. I heard about that.
And, you know, his official Facebook page for Old Boy actually released recently four new promo pics on Josh Brolin, who's playing, you know, the Old Boy character. It's 20-year imprisonment. Now, if, you know, you're not familiar with this story, there's always the manga. You could read about it, or you could watch the old movie. You know, if you're going to go ahead and see this movie and you haven't seen it before, I wouldn't recommend doing that. This movie has such a twist to it. You know, it's a great, great film. The original was. So I'm hoping that Spike Lee, who hasn't done anything for a while now, actually, he's been on a little hiatus, right?
Yeah, I mean, his last big film was Miracle at St. Anna, you know, World War II documentary type.
Yeah, I remember that. That was what year did that come out in?
I think that was like 2008, 2009. I think it was 2008.
2008. Yeah, so it's been a while since he's been at the directing helm, and I guess he was looking for a special project to do. It's always been in the works, and he's actually been trying to do this film for a while now.
I think Spike's been on it since about 2009. Ironically, I know at one point Steven Spielberg was interested in this film as well. But I think that was before Spike got involved.
Like I said, if you haven't seen it and you want to wait for the Spike Lee remake, don't watch it, just because it will blow that ending for you.
Yeah. So. Once you see the ending of this, you it'll stick with you, so you may as well just wait for Spike's version.
Exactly. It's like the whole Kaiser Soze thing. It's what's the usual suspects. Once you see the ending of that, I mean, there's no going back to it. There's no way that they could remake that movie and somebody be like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't see that, you know.
Now, from movies, we jump into video games, and one thing I didn't want to talk about is how amazing Time Warner has done with video games, especially for the DC Universe. Actually, the CEO came out earlier today, said that, you know, they are by far the biggest studio making money on these DC characters, that they've released so many successful video games, like Injustice Gods Among Us was actually the top-selling game for two consecutive months in April and May of this year. Gribblenauts Unmasked launches in about a week, and not one, but two Batman Arkham games are going to be dropping within the next month. Not only that, but they're also publishing a Lego Marvel superhero game across every platform, something that a lot of people are actually looking for, and it actually has a cameo from Stan Lee. Stan the Man Lee himself is in that Lego video game, so he's making cameos in everything now.
Yeah, he was on Big Bang last year or the year before. He's kind of showing up in everything now.
You know, you never can get enough Stan, so DC doing really well with these games, and said that they're really on track, doing great things with the company. Hopefully, you know, with these new Arkham games, I don't know if you've ever played the Arkham games from the Batman series, but they've been amazing.
Yeah, the great graphics, you know, and just great gameplay from beginning to end. And I think what's happened is over time, since there's been so much more money put into every avenue of superheroes, whether it be comic books, films, that, you know, the video game industry has been slow to adapt that, because a lot of people, it just didn't have that niche. So But it's good to see that finally you're seeing people play those games that feature superheroes, and that in the development of those games that we're seeing better graphics. It's not, oh, you know, constantly Batman versus Joker or, you know, things of that nature. It's more detailed, better storylines, because that's what it takes. You know, it's a good video game, you got to have the storylines, and you got to have the graphics and keep the people interested in new adventures.
Exactly, and I think that's what sold these Arkham games more than anything else, because not only did you face, like, Joker, but you faced a whole slew of who's who of, you know, the criminal underbelly of Gotham. So it was a fantastic gameplay. And, you know, speaking of actually fantastic gameplay, didn't the new game come out this week, something that's highly anticipated?
Well, yes, you are correct. The brand new Grand Theft Auto V came out, and it came out on Tuesday, the 17th. It is supposed to be one of the, like, a breakthrough game in terms of world play and how much detail. You're talking, you know, 5 years
from the last one.
Obviously, they put a lot of time in this, a lot of details. It's not a game where it's just you're playing as one character. You can be one of three characters. You don't have to follow the storyline. You can do the tasks or missions in different orders. So if I play it and someone else plays it, it's a totally different gaming experience, because the goal is to complete the missions, but it doesn't matter how you do them, which is very unique.
That's really cool, because, I mean, that's come a long way from, you know, the original game. And I remember back in the day, and I do mean a long way, because the original Grand Theft Auto was actually a top view of a boxy kind of thing. It's nothing compared to what it is now. You know, I could definitely see where they've listened to the fans of the game. They've listened to what they've wanted, and they've delivered.
Yeah. And just researching it, you know, like one example, I mean, it's in the fictional town of San Andreas, but we all know it's Los Angeles. But they sent a crew to metropolitan Los Angeles just to go around and take over 250,000 pictures just to piece together the city and transfer that to digital and go, okay, we're going to make this. So the demographics of how many people live in this area of town, it's actually about as authentic as you can get. So
that's fantastic.
I mean, it's just a lot of time in it, and you know, the online world is supposed to be fantastic, where you can fly planes, you can steal a Zeppelin and fly over the city, apparently. You know, there's just endless things you can do, and I know that's set to go live, I think, October 1st. I don't even think it's out yet. So I've only watched the preview videos, but I think I'm going to give an update in maybe a few weeks to actually say how the gaming experience is going. But and it, of course, it's broke all sorts of selling video game records here over the past day or two. And
I'll actually look forward to that review. I'll expect it from you, Wang. Top notch stuff.
Yes, top notch review, probably complete with data, PowerPoint, all that good stuff. That goes with the great Wang and his abilities.
His repertoire.
That's right.
Well, you know, speaking of repertoires and reputations and men who just seem to defy all odds, Joss Whedon was actually kind of being credited for saving Thor the Dark World.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard about this, but apparently Joss Whedon was called in by Alan Taylor, who's the guy who's directing Thor the Dark World, and in the latest issue of SFX magazine, he revealed that called in his help because he's like, you know, I really need to go ahead and make sure that this works because it's not translating well from paper to film. So, I mean, in his words, he said, Joss came in to save our lives a couple of times. We had a major scene that was not working on the page at all in London, and he basically got airlifted in, like a SWAT team or something. He came down, rewrote the scene, and before he got back to his plane, I sort of grabbed him and said, and this scene, and he rewrote two other scenes that I thought had problems. Then finally we let him go, like as if he was a hostage. He took off again, and we shot the scenes, and they were just much better and much lighter on their feet, much more fun, much more surprising than what we had been trying to do. I can relate to guys who come out of the TV world, since that's where I came from, and being able to land and work and resolve a problem quickly, I was really grateful. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Alan Taylor is actually, you know, does some work with Game of Thrones as well.
Right.
So it was really interesting for him to call in Joss. And, I mean, Joss, you know, he has a hell of a track record. Just knowing this actually makes my anticipation for seeing Thor the Dark World, which comes out November 8th of this year, elevates the film to another level. I'm actually really excited to see it.
Right, right. And you know, speaking of Joss Whedon, you know, he is involved in the new TV show, The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
Which debuts September 24th on ABC. And, I mean, what is your opinion of this? I mean, comic books to network television, it's not been as successful recently as the movies have. I mean, what's your take on this?
Okay, well, I think the viewing audience has changed a bit. I think that because of Joss's popularity and fan base, I mean, right now, you know, you don't hear kind of an uproar. You don't hear kind of a lot of people saying, well, this is not going to work because it's Joss Whedon. I mean, you know, he created Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Dollhouse, Firefly, these amazing shows, and don't get me wrong, a lot of these shows are not around anymore. Some of them were cut short too early because, you know, this guy was before his time.
Right.
And then you have to think about the fact that a lot of superhero shows nowadays are kind of catching on. You had Smallville, which, you know, started off with a relatively small following and grew to just enormous proportions. And then you have Arrow right now, which is about to start its second season, which also had a huge following. So there are certain transitions that work well.
They're definitely in there where they've worked. You know, Smallville, you know, still wasn't. The thing about Smallville was it was a great show. Again, not on a major network. Arrow, same sort of situation. So this is really a big test because I think we're about to go down a road that could be very prosperous,
mm-hmm.
Or we might be the superhero shows might be just relegated to, you know, the CW and things like that, because you're talking about a major network, ABC, although. You know, they can't experiment. They're not at the top, you know. I mean, CBS, obviously, the top network from a viewership. But then CBS kind of ventured into a weird realm when they had this Under the Dome as a summer fill-in sci-fi show. Again, sci-fi and superheroes are can be different, but, you know, you had a lot of people who were like, well, I'm going to watch this, and they've already renewed that for a second summer season next year. Mm-hmm. But this is going to be different, you know, because you've got Marvel comic book behind it. So
exactly,
how will it transition to the small screen? You know, most of the actors in the TV show, they weren't in any of the Marvel films, but some of the characters were. One of the actors, Clark Gregg, I mean, he did appear in, you know, in numerous films. He was in Thor. He was in Iron Man 2. He was in the Avengers playing Agent Phil Coulson. So he's been in some of the films, but the other people are kind of going to carry it. And there are no major actors, you know. We just know that from a production standpoint. That had to do with casting, and we're not going to invest a lot of money into the actors and have them commit to a 13-episode show because we don't know how long it's going to make it. But that's just part of the business, you know.
Well, you have to see it as this way, too. Look, when Joss casts and he's been, you know, quoted saying this several times through, you know, multiple TV shows or even in films. When he casts someone, he has to get the feeling. It doesn't matter if you're a nobody, if you haven't done anything before, if you read the role and he believes you're this character, I mean, he will hire you on the spot. And, you know, he understands that you're going to be this character. So just the fact that these people are relatively unknown doesn't necessarily bother me as much as, you know, if it was somebody else who was doing the casting and the writing, you know, because, like I said, Joss has helmed this thing to kind of be, you know, the successful spinoff from the film. And, you know, like, you have everybody saying, well, sometimes it hasn't been successful, and ABC has had a series of kind of disappointing shows when it comes to, you know, one-hour, you know, dramas or just things that get canceled 2-3 shows in.
Right.
We've seen this happen. And the thing is, I think that that goes a lot to say about the viewing audience as well. I mean, we have very little patience when it comes to certain things. I think that if we've seen the show before, if we've seen a similar premise, we don't give it the chance that it needs.
Right. You know, when you're making a one-hour TV show every week, you know, which is really, in reality, is probably about a 46-minute show, mm-hmm. You know, you have to kind of put in, I guess, for lack of a better term, filler, because, you know, there is some storylines that, you know, everybody watches a show and go, oh, I don't really know why they had that in there, or why did we have to delve into that in relationships. So it's going to be interesting to see if all of that backstory stuff is going to be enough to keep everybody's interest. You know, with a movie, you know, you constantly knock the script down to where it's almost, it should be perfect, not always. But, you know, with a TV show, hopefully this has enough to keep everybody's interest.
Exactly. Just coming off the fan base and coming off the amazing reaction it had at the San Diego Comic-Con this year, you know, plus all the buzz behind it. I mean, it's both a good thing and a bad thing. Because sometimes when you have that anticipation and you have all this, you know, want and craziness going on with the fans, and they see it and it might not be exactly what they wanted, it's, you know, it could be a huge disappointment. But on the other side of that, according to everything that came out from, you know, the San Diego Comic-Con, and they saw a huge teaser, you know, of the show, they loved it.
Yeah. But I'll say this, and again, take pilots with a grain of salt, because there's been plenty of shows we've watched that first pilot and went, wow, this is great. And by week eight, we're like, oh, yeah, what happened?
I completely agree with you. And, you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed with this one. Like I said, I really enjoy Joss's work. So I'm hoping that the level of quality is going to be there, and ABC really holds tight with this one.
Yeah. I mean, we're all going to give it a go. And, you know, let's hope, you know, it can surprise us. I always like when a show has something up its sleeve that I don't know about. I don't need a shocker every week, but you have to kind of keep a surprise, you know. I mean, it's, you know, you go into watching an episode of CSI, and you know by the end of the show they're going to catch the bad guy. Where I think sometimes you might have to write, especially when you're going down this avenue, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe you toss in a little wrinkles here and there, you know.
Exactly. That,
don't reveal everything and keep us guessing, which Josh Whedon's very good at that.
And I think since they do have the Marvel Universe to play around with, one thing that's going to keep fanboys really excited is to see who's the next quote-unquote villain or superhero that they might see make a cameo. So hopefully, and you know, we've all known that there's certain stars that will cross over from film onto TV to do, you know, little spoofs of themselves or to carry that character over. I mean, look at everything that Tony Stark, Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. has done to push that character. I wouldn't be surprised if we make him, you know, if we see him make a guest appearance on the show. Something like that, you know, something that people will actually look forward to and will, you know, the buzz will generate from there. So keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think we'll watch it and let's see how it unfolds.
Today we have a really special guest, actually. Most superheroes and most, you know, comic celebrities that we read about all get their superpowers from either a radioactive spider bite or, you know, they're born with a mutant gene. This one in particular is very strange, as they ingested some buds and became Stoner Joe the Bunny. Now, I'd like to introduce to you guys Christopher Blue, or as he's known in the comic book world, as Blue.
Well, I am very slow today, so...
you gotta jump in there, buddy. It's just...
You can call me Blue.
There you go. This character is really a little bit out of the norm.
Yeah.
Tell me about his birth.
His birth?
Well, I mean, not figuratively. I mean, you know.
he came from a rabbit, hopefully. a rabbit that liked to do a little too much drugs in her heyday, I guess you could say.
Her heyday.
But, yeah, you know, in her 20s, early 30s, you know, partying a little too much. But
that's what happened with Wang's mom, too.
Jesus.
Yes.
Is that how Wang was produced?
We don't like. He doesn't like to talk about it. He's still going through a lot of therapy for it, though.
Oh, I see. I got you.
It was way back during Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, and Wang.
Oh, nice.
Whole lot of Wang on that one.
Oh, yeah, right.
Reading everything correctly, it didn't start with the Joe, the Stoner Bunny. It started with a spleen.
Well, kind of. Because Stoner Joe the Bunny is the name of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And the title character is obviously Stoner Joe the Bunny. But I just feel like if I were to focus on him and the whole, like, pot aspect of it, it would be a little too one note, I guess you could say.
All right.
So I think of it more as, like, a kind of like a sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
In vein of, like, Chappelle's Show or Saturday Night Live or Mad TV, any of those. And it's more basically what's funny to me, what's interesting, what is a good story. So I added these two other very absurd characters, and the spleen that you're referencing is actually Mr. Spleen.
Oh, I apologize.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Because there's actually a story I'm working on where he's just referred to as Spleen. So you're not too far off.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't realize he got the title of Mr. Spleen later. It's like, like, you know, he's working up to being a mister.
Oh, yeah, right. But he's a character I created in high school. I was very much into old 90s cartoons from, like, Nickelodeon, such as, like, you know, Ren and Stimpy and Doug and Rugrats and all the classics, you know.
But, exactly.
So I'm guessing from that humor and that kind of being my background, I'm also really into, like, Looney Tunes and all the great stuff from the 40s and 50s, Popeye, Silly Symphonies, Terry Toons.
Yes.
But I'm also really into, like, comedy and comedians and stuff. So all of that combined kind of made Stoner Joe. And I think of myself more as, like, a comedian when I'm working on it. And so through that, I just think so much more can be added to the series than just, like, a stoned couch potato, I guess you could say. So the idea was to add these other two characters, and you have Mr. Spleen, who can take any occupation. He's a talking, walking spleen.
You know, it's like if, first of all, you know, not that I would recommend this, but if you do get stoned and then read this, sometimes it makes a lot more sense. But it makes sense on its own. I mean, a talking mm-hmm. spleen is obviously the character I would have, you know, picked opposite a bunny.
Yeah, Stoner Joe the Bunny kind of rolls off the tongue.
It actually does.
Yeah.
Nice choice of words there.
Yeah.
So,
and actually, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
You said you talked about getting stoned before you read it. I actually had an idea with my brother about having a little wrap paper in each issue. So you can
it's unconventional, to say the least. And these kind of ideas that kind of push yourself forward and out into the mainstream, uh-huh. because it's nobody else would think of that.
Exactly. And I really want to push the boundaries of what I can do with any medium.
Absolutely.
And I think as an artist, like any artist wants to do that as much as possible. So as creative as I can be, and like anything that I think will work, I'm going to do. And if it fails, well, then I get to start again.
And that's actually a really great attitude to have, because you can't actually fail at something and see what you're good at until, you know, you've hit point.
Because nobody knows. I mean,
exactly.
talk to writers that have been writing for decades, and they still say, I have no idea how it works. Just I hope that the next thing works. Ask the Simpsons writers or anyone.
Exactly.
I mean, that's exactly what they'll say.
That's the beauty of being creativity. You know, you can get creative and decide to go a certain angle. And if it doesn't work, you know, all you have to do is modify it, change it a little bit. So,
yeah,
you know, it's unlimited for you.
Exactly. That's what's so much fun about it.
And I mean, you stated that Ren and Stimpy was a big influence on you.
Oh, yeah. And people have told me numerous times, like, oh, this just looks like John Crisfalusi.
That's actually what I was going to bring up is that when looking at your work, you could kind of see that influence rub off, because he had some bizarre characters within his repertoire, not just in Ren and Stimpy, but if you look at the comics that he drew, the art that he drew.
Yeah, right.
His characters were way out there. And you also mentioned Jeff Smith's Bone.
Yeah, that was one of the things that got me started doing what I'm doing. I mean, I read Bone and I thought, like, all this creativity and all this drawing that I'm doing, I can actually do something with it. So I basically just honed in on that and focused on making that as best as I could.
Now, let me ask you this. Why weed? Just out of curiosity. I mean,
well, because it's funny to me. That was it, plain and simple. I was sitting around one night after I graduated from art school. I just had drawn this character that I had done back in high school, and I thought there was just a lot of huge potential for it, and it just happened to be Stoner Joe the Bunny. And so I used that as like a place to start out, because a lot of my ideas are not, you know, pot based. A lot of the humor and a lot of the stories will feature that, obviously, but it's just, to me, it's too easy and too one note to just focus it all on that. And I think that if I focus more on the humor, then I'll get a lot more out of that than if I just were to focus on the pot aspect.
You know, you graduated from the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. You obviously studied all types of mediums of art.
Yeah, correct.
You're basically doing the one-man band thing, which is extremely difficult.
Yeah. No, I just wouldn't recommend it. It's an impossible thing to do.
Well,
I'm far into it now, so can't go back.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's the thing. They say that people like, you know, Robert Kirkman, who did The Walking Dead with, he was just three people.
Yeah.
I've
read many interviews with that guy. That guy is very, like, I look up to him. He did a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and one thing that really, you know, and this is why I got you for the show right away. I was like, you know, right away you tried to go ahead and sell me on this idea. Mm-hmm. Sell me your character, kind of promote yourself.
Yeah.
Talk to me about everything that you're doing to promote yourself. I mean, it's a hard job as it is, you know, putting all this on your shoulders.
Yeah, and with no money, it's even more difficult. So, like I said, I wouldn't recommend it, but I actually have an agent right now, and I'm working with her to create ads and to talk to various we're actually talking to, like, legal pot shops and head shops to get these sold through them, and we're also talking to comic shops as well. As far as, like, marketing and advertising goes, I'll be at the Alternative Press Exposition in San Francisco. I'll be walking around. I'll have a big pile of my books, and I'm hoping to have issue 2 done by that point so I can kind of go around and sell them and market myself there, too. I plan to next year go to a lot of, like, music festivals, and, like, they have a lot of, like, hemp and weed festivals that they do throughout the country, as well as all the comic conventions and all that stuff, too. I'm just going to tour as much as I can and cross my fingers.
There you go. And just in case there are anybody who wants to write it down, the Ape Expo.
Yeah, which, I think that's the 14th and 15th.
Well, I think it was the 12th and the 13th. Is it?
Oh, I misread that. Sorry.
No, you could be right. I could be wrong. I think it's the 12th and 13th that the actual expo runs through. And
yeah,
let me,
12 and 13.
12 and 13. Yeah.
Okay.
It's 12 and 13.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you know, if you guys show up on the 14th and 15th, you know.
Yeah,
you
don't do that.
But I'm pretty sure, you know, you'll be able to go ahead and meet a lot of people there who.
Oh, yeah. I went to it last year, and I met tons of just fantastic people. Lots of talented people go to that thing, so I highly recommend it.
Now, Blue, do you have a – is there an actual, like, Stoner Joe the Bunny costume that you have, or is that not been made?
I was thinking, since he wears, like, a Jamaican kind of Rasta hat, I was thinking of making, like, a hat like that with, like, ears that attach to it. So when you put it on, you got, like, the Stoner Joe hat and the ears.
Let me tell you something, and I'm going to share this out there, and I'm not going to say who it came from because, you know, I don't want to get in trouble. But but there, I do know, and I've seen people when I go to conventions that hand make a lot of their stuff, which have, like, signature, you know, beanies or anything from the characters that they create. And, you know.
Marketing.
Exactly. And a lot of people buy it because, you know, it's like a trigger for them. It's like I was at a Flogging Molly concert, and there was a guy with an Adventure Time hat.
Okay.
And the guy, you know, the lead singer of Flogging Molly, stopped and said, "What the hell are you wearing?" And, you know, he got his moment in the sun, and he was able to yell, and, it, you know, not that he cared or remembered afterwards because, you know, they're Flogging Molly, and they're obviously more important than that guy wearing that hat. But that guy for what it's worth, represented, you know, a franchise, something that he loved. So, you know, you might have a really good idea there.
Yeah, and then get a big bulbous nose to go with it.
There you go. So that way, you know, you can complete it. And you know, what the hell, get some cosplay girls in there to follow you around.
Yeah, right. Get some sexy...
A sexy spleen.
Yeah, get a Miss Spleen.
You go and
even better, because like everyone will be dressed up, but no one will be dressed up as a Stoner Joe.
There you go.
Not yet, hopefully in a year or two. We'll only see Stoner Joe costumes.
So, you know, all you cosplay ladies out there listening in, which, you know, is probably like one or two.
Yeah, we need a Mrs. Spleen.
Yeah, there you go. You know, contact our boy Blue here, because he's going to put you up in the sexiest spleen outfit you've ever seen. So,
see a sexy spleen.
There you go. Now, I'm curious, because, you know, obviously getting into the head shops and stuff like that, it's going to be a lot easier for you, pushing the kind of material that you are. How would you sell this to a comic book store? You know, like, how would you market this? I mean, it's how would you say, hey, listen, I know that you get a lot of families and things like that in there. And, I mean, you know, they obviously sell mature content comics. But, I mean, this one is just flat out blunt.
Like, in your face.
In your face.
I don't know. For, like, pornography, they got, like, the plastic covering. You could do something like that. I'm still kind of talking with my agent.
Okay, yeah.
Still discussing things.
You're letting her kind of work things out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, no, that's
the guy that created it. She's like, okay, you got to do this now, and I'm like, really?
Well, you know, and a lot of people don't understand the ins and outs of trying to do indie publishing. So, how did you get an agent? I mean, I'm just really curious. Was it just something that you happened to land into, or was it something that you searched for?
An agent? It just kind of came to me. I was at an arts festival in Pittsburgh, and I had a client because I was a freelance artist when I first graduated, which I also don't recommend for people that are thinking of that kind of career path, but because it's just as difficult. I mean, freelance is hard to get. It's easier than, you know, creating your own thing and trying to sell it, but and the agent just kind of followed because I had a client who was totally worthless and didn't do anything for me, and I didn't get paid from it, but he did find me this agent who is kind of just promoting herself at an arts festival that she helps out various artists. And so I talked to her for like a year and a half, and she finally was like, yeah, you're going to be successful, so I'm going to help you out. And there you go.
You see, that's a great story, because it's like Wang, like many of the women in your life, when you beat them down for a whole year and a half, eventually they subdue.
Yes, they subdue. Yeah. And I can do, I have my way with them, then they run away. So
it puts the lotion in the basket.
In the basket. Yes, once they get out of my dungeon, they're all safe. So
now, you know, I'm curious. You're working on issue 2 right now. You said hopefully you'll have it released by the.
I hope by October, but it's going to look more like November.
Tell me a little bit about. I know that you have you've created some concepts for some new characters.
Yeah.
How did you do that process? And can you explain how these new characters will just kind of play a role in the lives and times of Stoner Joe the Bunny?
Oh, you mean like Mr. Spleen and the Nameless character?
The Nameless character, and I think there was, wasn't there another one? There was one more.
There was, in the first issue, there's a one-off character who's like a security guard at the head shop, pot shop, that he goes to. Because the first issue is about Stoner Joe going on vacation and looking to get some pot, and he's just having such a difficult time. Mr. Spleen, who in this story is called Dr. Spleen, is the doctor he goes to try and get his license. And then hilarity ensues.
Well, you know, with Dr. Spleen at the helm, I'm pretty sure, you know, because I'd like to find out where he got his doctorate.
Can only wonder. And the Nameless character turns out to be a clerk in the pot shop. As many horrific things happen to him throughout the story.
You know, if you go to stonerjoethebunny.tumblr.com, you can go ahead and purchase this first issue.
Yeah, you can purchase the first issue and the two-page origin story.
The mini comic.
Yeah, which was actually featured in, or is going to be featured in, the Fogel's Underground Pricing Guide, which will be out in November.
And that's from Hippie Comics, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Let me ask you this. Now, since you're working on this comic, are you doing all this digitally, or are you doing it?
It's about half and half. For some of it, like, I all pencil it out by hand. And then for most of it, I ink it on the computer, and I color it on the computer.
Okay.
But parts of the inking are also done by hand. Lots of shading and the... if there's any, like, cross-hatching I need and stuff like that.
And that's that is incredibly time-consuming, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's like 15-hour days, 7 days a week, so it's your whole life. And if you're going to do it, that's what you got to understand, so.
And, you know, like I said, that's why I admired what you do, is because, like I said, when you first messaged me, right from the start, all you wanted to do is, hey, listen, I can promote this, I want to get this in here, I want to get this out there. So I was like, I'm really curious to hear your story, and here it is, 17-hour days, you know, 12 days a week, so, I'm sorry.
More than 12 days a week.
It runs off. Days don't matter anymore.
Yeah, right. Every day is just the same exact thing.
You started off, what I mentioned was the trucker character.
Oh, yeah.
Which, he looks a lot like this guy I used to know, which I'm pretty sure we all know a guy who looks like this trucker guy.
I was just thinking of, like, a fat, kind of, like, trucker, like, Scottish guy.
That's very specific. That's all. He's got to be Scottish. I guess he does have kind of like a leprechaun look on his face.
Yeah, I was giving him like curly beard that kind of goes into his hair. Now, but if you look closely, there's the little hidden gem of him lactating out of his nipples.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, throughout the issue, because he's in issue two.
Now, remember, folks, I told you from the very beginning this was a very interesting and different example. Him lactating. It's where did you get that idea from?
I didn't really think about it. I just kind of drew it, and it made me laugh. Like, to be honest, that's kind of how most of my ideas. I don't really sit down to write. It's just throughout my day, I have ideas up the wazoo. So wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I always have, you know, paper and pencil with me. Usually, like, I carry around a notebook because I'm just always flooded with ideas. And like, one good idea that I catch, it just kind of pours out of me, and that's the way I write.
Much like this man's lactating nipples.
Yeah, exactly.
Pours out.
Not really have anything, just
And Lactating Nipples was my favorite Guns N' Roses album.
Oh, yeah? Mine too.
So, you know, it's funny because that's the blue stamp of approval is a of a comic drawing.
Let me put it into this story.
Exactly. And you know, that's the freedom of being an independent, you know.
That's why it's so awesome.
Publisher.
You don't have people being like, what the hell are you doing, dude?
Which I'm pretty sure there's plenty of folks out there, all, you know, five of our listeners are saying that right now. Like, what? But
what is this? Why am I listening to this?
This is actually going to be great. Now, do you plan on expanding? Because, you know, most people expand naturally.
I want this to be as big as it possibly can be. And if that happens to be just kind of moderately successful or as successful as like The Simpsons, I would be happy with both.
Now, would you be willing to trust somebody else to do, like, help you with the art or help you with any of this? I mean, or do you want to keep it as a one-man show?
For the most part, I want to be like a Jeff Smith and just keep it all to myself. Mm-hmm. But I would be open to, like a one-off story. If someone else wants to, like, write something or illustrate something, I would be up for that for, like, one issue. Or, for example, an issue with multiple stories within that people can collaborate upon or do their own thing. But for the most part, I just kind of want to keep it a one-man show, basically.
And just out of curiosity, if you had to choose, like, to give up one, either the writing aspect or you know, the drawing aspect, which one would you rather keep?
Myself, I would probably say the writing. I've met a lot of people who have actually asked me if they can write something, and I've just heard a lot of really bad ideas and a lot of stuff that's just kind of awkward. And like, I know my stuff is
awkward coming from you,
but
you know,
something good versus something bad, and you can tell. I mean, as eccentric as it is, you can still tell, like, the validity of the talent and the work that goes into it. Like, yeah. I can watch silly episodes of, like, Adult Swim shows, and you can still tell, like, a good one versus a bad one, or, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Basically a crapshoot idea.
Yeah.
You know, something that was genuinely thought of as hey, this could be funny to some.
And then he's the only one that finds it funny or and it's a story or something. You know what I mean? Because I do actually show a lot of people my work. And I have a guy who actually kind of edits it and makes sure that it actually kind of makes sense with what it is within the context.
That's good to have because a lot of writers usually don't, you know, letting it go.
I'm a big fan of the guy that wrote Fight Club, the novel.
Yes.
And he says that every Tuesday he goes to writing classes and has his writing reviewed, even though he's as successful and well-known as he is. And I hold myself to that as well. I hired the guy to edit my stuff.
Oh, there you go. And an interesting thing about Chuck, the guy who wrote that.
Say his last name, so.
I can't pronounce it, and I'm not going to try because I'll butcher it.
Yeah, whatever.
But his work is actually really bizarre. When you read stories like Choke.
That one's crazy.
Yeah. He did a seminar in the University of Miami where he talks about that, where he talks about being your own writer. And, you know, you write – you don't write for somebody else. You write for yourself and what you would like to see.
Yeah, I agree with that too. But you've also got to understand that there's an audience that's going to be looking at it.
And that's the portion of him saying, well, I'll give my work to other people. I don't mind being scrutinized because any feedback is good feedback.
Yeah, I would agree that negative feedback is better than positive feedback, but yeah, any feedback.
Now, it's interesting you say that because I've asked this question of other guests. What do you find the most constructive out of negative feedback? I mean, what do you like to pull out of there, and how do you, you know, basically look at the difference between I can use this and grow from it, or, you know, I really don't think that this person is in line and it's just somebody being stupid?
Well, I mean, I look at who's telling me the criticism or the feedback. That's number one. Everyone has their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather people tell me, like, how I can make it better, how I can make it more presentable and readable. From that, I just take into consideration what everybody has said, and I try to, as best as I can, I try to kind of see it through their eyes of what they have told me, the feedback or the criticism that they have told me. Negative feedback or criticism is better because you can always grow from negative feedback.
Exactly. And do you ever feel like, well, you know, it's a lot of people don't like this one thing, but you really like it, and you'd be like, well, you know, I even though they tell me that I should change this, I really don't want to. Being an independent artist, I mean, you could go ahead and have that creativity. But do you ever try to kind of cave into that, or do you just stick to what you love?
I mean, but only, like if it's obvious, you know what I mean? Like, if they're telling me to change something for a certain reason,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like it would be very obvious to anyone else looking at it, then I would change it. And especially if I don't have very much of an emotional connection to it, and it's not even working for me, and it doesn't produce multiple laughs, like, when I keep coming back to it,
mm-hmm.
or it just kind of doesn't work in the story visually or within the, like, written portion, well, then, yeah, I'm definitely going to change it. But there are certain things that I look at and I just don't want to change. Like, for example, I've had people tell me that Mr. Spleen does not look like a spleen at all. He actually looks like a penis. That can be a little bit of a problem sometimes, but it can also be kind of funny, you know? I have a parody of Braveheart that I'm doing where Stone Joe plays the part of Braveheart, and Mr. Spleen is his horse, so he's riding Mr. Spleen. If you actually look at the image, my sister was telling me that it just looks like, you know, he's got a giant, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a funny visual, but I didn't even realize that he looked like a penis until my brother told me, like, 6 years later after high school, and I started doing stuff.
You know, people will see what they want to see. I mean,
exactly. And I'm wondering what's going through his head.
I mean, I look at Mr. Wang every day and think of, you know, here's his big dick. So, yeah, there you go. And you hear Wang just laughing in the background. He's like, oh.
Hey, Blue, I was going to ask you a question. You still live in Pennsylvania now?
Yeah, I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Do you find when you travel around because of, you know, Pittsburgh's not the comic book capital of the world?
Pittsburgh sucks. No offense to Pittsburgh, but like.
Yeah, remember, direct all your angry letters to Blue.
That's right. Bye. But do you find that the doors are harder to open because you're. I mean, I don't think there's a comic book center, but is it a little harder because you're kind of off the grid a little bit, you know, being in the Midwest, I guess?
Yes, is my answer. There's nothing over here. And the people you meet are completely worthless. And I've met people, like, when I went to art school, who wanted to do exactly what I'm doing. But they'll either have a reason for not getting started on it, or they'll say, like, oh, I'll start tomorrow. Or they'll say, you know, it's too hard to write dialogue or something. And in Pittsburgh, you find a lot of that. People who think about things, but they don't actually do it.
Oh, Pittsburgh, it just seems to be like the Pittsburgh of the world.
I'm living in the Pittsburgh of the world, and even worse, I'm in Pittsburgh.
Well, there you go. Now, remember, any of our fans listening in Pittsburgh...
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't actually live in Pittsburgh. He lives in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Actually, I live in Canada. Remember, that's 555-555-555.
You can call that number, direct all your comments about...
You'll get my agent, so... Husky man.
There you go. And so, I mean, you said you wanted to do the con circuit as well. Does it all music festivals? I think this will do actually really good in music festivals.
Yeah, because I actually talked to people that were doing big name like music festivals and hymn conventions, and everyone I've talked to has said that this is something that needs to be there and something that would sell really, really well. The only problem is I don't have any money right now, so.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
Yeah, I was going to do all of that this summer. But forgot I need to eat some food.
Well, you know, that's Pittsburgh for you.
Don't want to die. Yeah. Once things get started, I'm planning to move out to San Francisco because that's where my brother is right now. So I would stay with him for a while and kind of get my feet on the ground. Get started out there.
Well, there you go. Well, if Blue's brother is listening in, lock your doors now.
Hey, shit.
Once he gets there, he'll never leave.
Blue's getting on your couch, and he's not leaving for 10 years.
Well, you don't know when I'm leaving, so I haven't said that yet.
Good point. Hey, it's like doomsday preppers, guys, okay? You want to get ready for Blue to arrive at your house.
Blue apologize.
Yeah, and I just wanted to tell all the listeners out there that if you Google Stoner Joe the Bunny, you can go to Amazon and you can download the e-edition of Stoner Joe the Bunny as well. So just a little promotion for Blue.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, Wang.
Hey, I'm looking out for our guest, man.
Well, you know, he's the great Wang for something. Blue, there's a little portion that we like to do with all of our guests, and it's called Fun with Wang. This is where...
Blue.
Well, it's not Fun with Blue. It's actually Fun with Wang. So Blue gets to have fun with Wang.
Well, I do that every day anyway, so.
Well, there you go. And thank you very much for enlightening us with that. Most people just laugh and just keep it quiet. But you took the joke and took it to the next level. Thanks, Blue.
Exactly.
That's Pittsburgh.
I just mean once a day. It's 17 hours, aren't I? I just spent on my comics, so.
That extra half an hour is Blue time. So I'll turn this over to Wang. Wang, you do your thing.
Hey, Blue, what we do is we take every guest and we just ask them random trivia questions. If you know them, we add up points and you get a mysterious prize at the end. The topics are comic books, films, just any general knowledge. We try to make them specific to the guests, so you might have some right in your wheelhouse. You think you're up for the challenge?
Yeah.
All right.
That sounds confident to me.
Yeah.
Now remember, there's a lot riding on this, Blue. All right, you gotta focus, man.
I don't know what my prize is.
Well, it's big.
I'll focus all that I can.
Now you're a comic book fan, I assume, Blue, right?
Yeah, you can say that.
All right, so...
I always like that. You could say that. That's
you can mean say that. I write one... Oh, sure,
yeah, you say that.
So, what famous comic book story made one of the biggest impacts on how drugs could affect anyone, even superheroes?
All right, you're going to have to repeat that. You were kind of going in and out.
Okay.
That's what she said. Sorry.
What famous comic book story made one of the biggest impacts on how drugs could affect even superheroes?
Oh, Jesus.
No, that's wrong. We'll give you another shot.
Not him. No.
That was my answer. I'm going to say it was Archie and Jughead.
Oh, see, that's very good. But that is incorrect. Yes. When the Green Arrow was away on a cross-country adventure with the Green Lantern and Black Canary, and I don't know what they were doing on this cross-country adventure.
They were discovering themselves.
Right. But but Roy Harper, or Speedy, he became addicted to heroin, and this happened in Green Lantern Volume 2 in 1971.
I'm going to say yes.
There you go, yes. It was actually issues 85 and 86.
I got that right.
You got that right. You get 11 points.
We'll give you that one.
What two famous actors who were in Star Wars Episode 6 Return of the Jedi last made their appearance in a Kevin Smith film years later, and named the film?
Oh, you can't Google. You can't Google this.
I hear you Googling. Look at him looking.
I hear you Googling.
I'm going to say the midget that was in R2-D2 and Han Solo, Harrison Ford.
Well, see, those are good guesses.
He was Jersey Girl.
Man, that is creative, but that is totally incorrect.
I thought that was spot on.
Well, what role did? Hold on, wait a minute. In order to validate your answer, what role did the midget play in that movie?
He played R2-D2, and maybe some of those Ewoks.
Does he
might have played a couple of those? I mean, knows how tall he was.
Have you ever seen Jersey Girl?
Yeah, that's the one with George Carlin, right?
Oh, boy. All right.
Wait, Jersey Girl? Yeah.
That was the answer you gave. What do you mean, Jersey Girl? Like, as if you're asking me the question, like, as if I said it.
Well, I told you the right movie. It's got, you know, Ben Affleck and George Carlin.
Yeah.
Who were both in Star Wars Episode 5.
Oh, well,
No, I'm done. I'm just confusing the hell out of you.
Carlin and Ben Affleck?
No, Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill. It's Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill. They both made an appearance in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Well, I was going to say those.
You were. You were almost there.
I was like, midget and R2-D2.
All right.
Which still went wrong.
Actually, I think the actor who played R2-D2 played a keg of beer in Jersey.
Yes, if so I remember that's partially correct. Right.
Yes. All right, maybe something a little bit, you know, headed for blues background here. There was a movie called There was a movie called Donnie Darko that came out.
Okay, that's a good movie.
Contained an apocalyptic rabbit that was 7 feet tall.
Stoner Joe.
What? I was going to ask what his name was and what is his name?
Rabbity the Rabbit. That's Steve.
You are very, very close, Blue. His Rabbity name was Frank.
Oh, Frank.
Which is what his friends called him, Rabbity Rabbit.
Rabbity Rabbit.
Yeah,
I
don't
know. I saw that movie like 3 years ago. Can't remember.
Blue, I believe you have connections to the great state of Kansas and the great state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are the state birds of those two states?
Kansas, it's the Jayhawk.
Well, that's the name of the basketball team, but it's not actually the state bird, which is the meadowlark.
Pennsylvania. It's the
Pennsylvania is the grouse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but good guess though. No, you're right there.
You know, that deer in headlights silence that you gave us, Blue, just shows the level of deep thinking that
deep
went
thinking.
Deep.
Very deep.
Right. You get minus 400 points for that.
I can work with that, and we can build up from there.
Yeah, we can build up. We're headed for the great finish here.
But,
now, according to the 100% factual website Wikipedia, How many films since Reefer Madness in 1936 feature excessive marijuana use?
Oh, geez. Like, I'm going to say probably like, man, there's so many. I don't know. How about 100?
I mean, that's actually a very good guess. It's 85. You got better than I did. When I first was thinking, oh, okay, how many films have weed in
like
them?
Every film?
I was like, maybe 30, you know. But then you start adding them up, you know, all the Fridays and all the Cheech and Chong's
and Pineapple Express,
you know,
and Harold Kumar. And all.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, Harold and Kumar. I mean, you got a lot of – so – yeah, a lot more than I thought. So maybe Hollywood is very weed positive.
Well, see, that's what I'm hoping, because the whole culture seems to be going that way. If you look at places like Colorado and Washington State, Colorado wants to just turn it into alcohol. They want to tax it just like alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had discussions with people. You know, if you make marijuana legal today, it's not like the whole country is going to go – say, hey, I got to get stoned right now. A lot of people will, but not everybody will.
Yeah, the people that smoke it will just have a more convenient way and a less dangerous way of purchasing it and eating tons of food. I mean,
it's what we do in America. I mean, fast food joints, stocks go through the roof.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be one of the things that would help the economy up. Totally.
Yeah, of course, exactly. it would slow the health care system down tremendously.
Yeah, because there's no need for all the excessive like pills that we push on people. It's even been proven that they don't help.
Plus, I'm pretty sure Betty Crocker and the brownie business would go through the roof.
Yeah, and it would bring Paula Deen her job back.
Right.
Yeah, Paula Deen. Poor Paula Deen.
Paula Deen.
Oh.
She's just a funny person.
Yeah. Right, two more questions. Two more questions, Blue, and then we'll let you out of here with a prize. Dazed and Confused, the movie. There was weed use, obviously. But how many times did they use the word man? Like, hey, man. What's up, man?
I'm going to say every other word in that movie. I've actually seen that movie, so I'm going to say 100 times.
Well,
that's the movie with Sean Penn, right?
No, that's Fast Times.
That's Fast Times.
Dazed and Confused was kind of thing, Matthew McConaughey. Ben Affleck was in it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like 1970s.
I've never seen neither.
All right, but the word man.
So I'll say 100.
100, look at him, all right. 203 times.
See, I was close. I was off by three.
You were off by just a few hundred.
No.
and we will begin with trivia that this last trivia question, you're going to be amazed at how it really centers around you, Blue, when you finally, when I finally give you the answer. So, since you live in the, as you say, Blue, not us, horrible state of Pennsylvania, what date does rabbit hunting season begin in the state of Pennsylvania?
Can you repeat that? Sorry.
What date does rabbit hunting season begin in Pennsylvania?
It's the first Monday after Thanksgiving, or is that bear hunting season?
No, that's deer season. I'll give you a pass.
Yeah, I don't know when rabbit season is.
Here's the interesting thing. Rabbit season begins October 12th, which means that's the same day you're in San Francisco at the APE. So you can't go rabbit hunting that day.
Well, now I can't go to Ape. Sorry, guys, I won't be an ape this year. Gotta go find some bunnies to smoke with.
Awesome.
Well, Blue, adding up your score, Wang's gonna go ahead and put that down. Stick
but,
all your.
See, it's like whose line? The points don't matter.
No.
Well, no, they matter here. We actually keep a running track. And,
yes, you got a negative 3,106, and apparently you owe us $4.
But you know what? It's perfectly okay because we'll take it out of the city of Pittsburgh. Since it's sucking the life out of you, we'll suck $4 from them.
Yeah, see?
In some shape, way, or form.
I lost because of Pittsburgh.
But you know what? We don't like to let any of our guests go without feeling like they've actually won something from our show. So in the mail, you will be receiving an I Heart Pennsylvania bumper sticker just to go ahead and not only that, it attaches with a little sparkly one that says I Heart Pittsburgh with a unicorn farting a rainbow. So and we look forward to sending that to you and all the angry hate mail we'll probably get from Pittsburghians. Is that even a word?
Well, hey, man. Hate mail means people know who I am. So the way I look at it, like, I don't care if you like this as long as you're looking at it. Like, that's all that matters.
And that's the kind of attitude you always got to have. And let me tell you something, Blue. It was a pleasure having you on.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Really good, Blue.
Thanks.
And, you know, as always, we're going to go ahead and you can go and click the links below, which has all of Blue's information, where you can go ahead and get his comic, when he's going to be at Ape, just in case you missed that information. You could always rewind. This is the Internet, people. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And
do whatever you want on the Internet.
Exactly. And, Blue, I'll give you those 30 minutes back so you can go ahead and have fun with your Wang.
Oh, yeah.
And,
thank you.
You know what? That it's we've done this show several times, and nobody's brought it up like you have. So,
set a world record or something like that.
Or something like that. Exactly. Better find.
I'm the first to do it, and I'm white. So.
Oh. So, anyway, this is Deadpool Speaks with Beach Bum Comics, and with me, as always, is the great Wang and our guest, Blue. Thank you very much for being on.
Over and out.
Thank you for listening this week, and remember, just like always, we will be back next week with another great guest and more adventures from the land of Chimichanga Talk. So tune in next time, same Deadpool time, same Deadpool channel. Yeah, don't rely on the great Wang for nothing, because he's really slow. Like, I mean,
hey, calm down now.
Well, hey, I'm the same way, so we'll be perfect.
All right, awesome. So today in the room we have an IQ of about 120 combined. So.